sense if we would spend a little bit of time trying to talk about a topic which is of immense importance. It's a topic which we'll see next week in particular. I think for the Chasam Sofer was a little bit unique. And what I wanted to try to do was speak about the way that different Mefarshim, the way that different Bali Machshava, the way different Lamdanim may have learned Chumash. Chumash is a very complex book. I want to give a little bit of a hakdama, and we'll try to do a good job with it. Chumash is a complex work for a lot of reasons. Number one, there seem to be a lot of different things going on in Chumash. Chumash seems to have narrative. It has stories. Chumash seems to have law. It seems to tell us halacha, what exactly we're supposed to do. It seems to have elements of like history. It's really not so clear exactly how to understand well, like what a Chumash is as a whole. Not only that, but what makes Chumash also somewhat intriguing is the Medrash Rabbah and Bamidbar Rabbah there in source number one, that it's something that with which we know K'shem Sheyayin Cheshbono Shivim Kach Yeshivim Panim LaTorah, that we compare sometimes Torah to wine. Because wine is Bigmatria 70, there are 70 different interpretations of Torah, meaning that when you look at Chumash, so it can be understood in different ways. There's a certain kind of range which is appropriate. Further, the fact that there are different sections of Chumash, does that mean that I have to learn different sections of Chumash in different ways? Does it mean the halachic sections I learn one way, other sections a different way? Do I have a uniform goal in what exactly I'm doing in Chumash? We also know, this we'll speak about at a much greater length, Be'ezra Hashem, next week, there's something called, or in 2 weeks, I guess, something called Pardes. Pardes, Pshat, Remez, Drash, and Sod. That there are different, even, forget anything else, there are different ways of looking at it. The Pshat, understanding the plain meaning of the text, understanding Remuzim, the world of Gematrias, a certain kind of Remez, which you can find, Drush, to find what that means, Sod, Kabbalah. So there's a lot of different things going on when it comes to understanding Chumash. There's an additional factor. Not only are there different things in Chumash, not only are there Shivim Panim LaTorah and Pshat Remez Drash and Sod, not only are there different sections of Chumash, but in many ways, we at least do have something called a Torah Sheba'al Peh. And a Torah Sheba'al Peh means that even when you have, on some level, the book that is Chumash, that book that is Chumash is a minimum for many, and certainly for all of us halachically, going to be impacted by what exactly we understand in Chazal, in Midrashim, in Chazal, in Gemara, in Bavli, Yerushalmi, whatever it happens to be. So in a certain sense, what you have is a very, very different text to be able to open up, because we're not sure exactly what we do. There are different potential ways of going about how you're going to navigate Torah Sheba'al Peh, navigate different forms of thought, what exactly your goal is. For that reason, very unsurprisingly, if you go down to the Otzer and you would go to the, I don't know, hundreds of different Sfarim that are there on Chumash, you'll find very, very different works on Chumash. You'll find, looking around the room right now, you'll find a Sefer like Chavetz HaSharim, which is like Lamdus, using Chumash as a way of expressing, and really, again, it's classic Lamdus. You look straight ahead and you have Sifri Chassidus on Chumash, you have something else entirely, which is defined by some. Many of the Chassidus Sfarim on Chumash are not really on Chumash. They're really Sfarim that express ideas that are loosely connected to Psukim at times. That's the way, at least, that some define it. That unlike, aside from like Likutei Moharan and Tanya, which are like systematic works, a lot of Chassidus Sfarim are on Chumash, but they're really ways of expressing really important ideas with connections to Chumash, more than their goal is to explain the Psukim themselves. So part of it is how does a person learn Chumash? How do you navigate these things? I thought we would do this at least in 2 weeks. This week I want to speak about a little bit of Rashbam and Ibn Ezra, the world of Pshat for some of the Rishonim. Speak about Rav Hirsch, who did some interesting things in his Peirush on Chumash. And if we have time, we'll speak a little bit about Rabbi Lam, hopefully. Next week I want to speak, again, we'll see exactly how to do it, but I would love to speak a little bit the Chasam Sofer and the Orach Chaim, and maybe the Ramban, and maybe some others, but we'll see. But the way they learn Chumash is really, really important. And many of us, I think, are a little bit more familiar with the way that different people learn Gemara, because we spend a lot more time learning Mefarshim on Gemara. So let's try and break these things down a little bit. There are Rishonim that maintain. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos, similar Gemara, Masechta Sivamos, but in a different context, that bederech klal, normally we assume ein mikra yotze midei pshuta. That while there are different interpretations of psukim, and there are psukim that are defined and understood in the context of Chazal, there were rishonim that nekirushim ala Torah did not focus on that. It doesn't mean that they rejected Chazal, but it means that when they sat down to learn Parshas Vayeshev, their goal was not to understand what is found in Torah HaKabbalah. Their goal was not to understand what is found in how the Gemara interprets the psukim, but their goal is to understand how to read the psukim kipshuto. How to read the psukim kipshuto? Mikra yotze, yotze midei pshuto. Two of the Rishonim, some of the stuff we're going to say right now is fairly well known. We'll try to go over again. Today's really about offering some highlights. Two of those Rishonim are the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam. The Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam. Says the Ibn Ezra, uva'avor hadrash, this is the Hagdam and the Parish and Chumash, derech ha-pshat einenu sara. I'm not going to leave pshat for drush. No, I'm going to stick with pshat. Kishiv in panim l'torah, because there are different levels of interpretation. He's not denying the existence of Gemaras and the like. He's saying that when it comes to that when it comes to his Parish, his primary goal is to focus on pshat. Now, there are different forms of pshat. Many people would say that they are pshat, but if you, at some level, you know, take stock, you would say, but their pshats look very, very different, not just what they think is pshat, but the whole idea of what pshat even means. It's like if you go to a bunch of shiurim nowadays and people say it's like a brisker kind of a shiur, and you'll say, well, there's so many different things going on when these shiurim are defined by that word, I don't even know what that would begin to mean if I just went around different shiurim and said, oh, it's brisker. I don't even know where to begin. So what's interesting is the Rashbam is a piece in Parshas Vayeshev. It's a very, very famous Rashbam. The Rashbam is talking about, now many Rishonim don't always tell you how they do what they do or why they're learning a particular way. Some do, some not. The Rashbam in Parshas Vayeshev has a very important comment. He thinks that many focus too much and brought too often into their Perushim and Chumash, even in their search for Pshat. They brought too much to the Midrashim, says the Rashbam, because of the pious nature of some of the Rishonim, this askulintos achar hadrasos shehein ikar. That what happened was they focused on what's primary, which is what the Gemara says, how we interpret different things. That is the main, that is the ikar in many ways, the drashos, how we paskin, the halachas that we learn. But because they focused so much on that, mitokach lohurgulu ba'omek pshuto shel mikra. So a lot of these great, great mefarshim that spent so much time understanding how the Gemara interprets psukim, so they themselves were not used to this art form or this interpretation, this capacity to read Chumash Kipshuto. He is a grandson of Rashi, and it's a very wild line here. It says the Rashbam, it's very, very famous. Gam Rabbi Shlomo, Avi Imi, Me'erei Ne'agola, and my mother's father, Rashi, Shepirish Torah Nevi'im Uksuvim, Nasan Lev Lefaris Pshuto Shel Mikra. Rashi tells us this in the Parish of Chumash, Rashi tries to explain according to Pshat, but still, if you read the Rashbam or if you read the Ibn Ezra, you'll see the Rashbam's pshat is often different than Rashi's pshat. It says the Rashbam, "Va'afani Shmuel ben Meir Chos knows that zal." It's v'chachti imo. He said, "I used to fight with Rashi a little bit. That Rashi, what you're doing isn't really pshat. You're quoting Midrashim too much. You're not the rigorous pshat." V'hodili, and Rashi admitted to me, or Rashi agreed to me, "Sheu hayalo p'nai," that if Rashi had more time, "Hayitzarich la'asos pirushim acherim." Rashi would have to write new commentaries on Chumash and the like. Lefi hapshatos hamitchachim b'chol yom. According to the new pshat, which is coming each and every day. Rashbam is a believer that even a Rishon like Rashi that has lines sometimes, v'ani bat v'faris p'shatos shel mikra. Maybe we'll have time to speak about when Rashi does and doesn't use Midrashim in a very fascinating incident of Abish Rebbe. But in general, the Rashbam avoids mentioning Gemaras and Midrashim, unless he thinks it really is pshat. Some suggest, as maybe the Lubavitcher Rebbe, for Rashi, that Rashi and Chumash works a little bit differently, which is Rashi and Chumash sometimes just quotes the Midrashim, and sometimes Rashi, if he doesn't have a good pshat, well then, if he feels like he's not satisfied with the pshat, so then he'll go quote Midrashim. For the Rashbam, they're pshat. Then we have to focus on pshat in many, many ways. There is, however, an amazingly intriguing machlokas between the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam. Some of us may know this about learning Chumash al derech hapshat. The machlokas is as follows. Okay, and this is very important when you learn the difference between learning Sefer Bereishis and learning Parsh Mishpatim, or learning any of the halachic sections in Chumash. Okay? It's one thing to learn pshat when you're talking about Parshas Vayeshev. You want to learn pshat. What happens, there's less at stake, and maybe Chazal are not functioning with the same degree of exclusive authority that maybe they do in the world of halachic sections of Chumash. What about halachic sections of Chumash? In those sections of Chumash, are you still allowed to? Is there still value? Is it still appropriate? Should the goal still be to learn those halachic sections al derech hapshat, even if halacha ma'isa we paskin differently? Or alternatively, is it that when we get to those halachic sections, so those halachic sections we learn, like those halachic sections, and we learn them according to the interpretation of Chazal? I'll give you two potential examples where this comes up. We spoke about this at length in other contexts. We'll try to just give up, you know. Torah tells us that if you knock out someone's eye, so Chumash says, ayin tachas ayin, eye for an eye, eye for an eye. Let's assume for a moment that the simple pshat of eye for an eye is not the way Chazal learned in Perek HaChovel. The Gemara Bava Kamma tells us that ayin tachas ayin means if you knock out someone's eye, you pay the value of an eye. That's how Chazal darshnit, machloksim, how Chazal darshnit exactly, but you pay the value of someone's eye. Most of us would probably understand that in the world of Pshuto Shel Mikra, that traditional mikra is eye for an eye, that you lose an eye, that you lose an eye. So now if you're writing a commentary on Chumash, on that pasuk of ayin tachas ayin, do you interpret it as eye for payment, or do you interpret payment for an eye, or do you interpret it as eye for an eye? What do you do? Or another context, the Torah tells in Parsha Mishpatim that if you're an Eved Ivri, and you decide, certain kinds of Eved Ivri at least, that you want to extend your service and become what's referred to as in Eved Nirtza, you really should be able to go free. It's been 6 years already. You know, it's time to go. And you decide, you know what? I love my master. So I can go to the doorpost, you know, the whole Nirtza ceremony. And says the Torah that we become an Eved Nirtza, v'avdo le'olam. And you become a servant forever, forever. Chazal darshin le'olam means le'olam moshel yovel. That you continue to be a thing until whenever the Yovel year comes. If it comes in a year, so you can extend your service by 1 year. If it comes in 47 years, you have 47 more years. Most of us would have thought that the simple pshat of the le'olam is le'olam means forever. Le'olam means forever. What it means is be so. Now, if you're writing a commentary on Chumash, how do you interpret v'avdo le'olam? What's it going to be? Do I go with the pshat? Do I go with the Gemara? We'll see in a little bit that there are those who maintain elements of Rishonim and a variety of Achronim, that in fact, if you learn Pshat well, you'll see the Pshat almost always correlates with the Drasha of Chazal. Why Le'olam really means Yovel, why Ayin there always means payment. You'll see ideas like that maybe in a little bit. But what do you do when there's conflict? That is the machlokas between the Ibn Ezra and the Rashbam and their respective Perushim and Chumash. The Ibn Ezra writes there in his Hakdama, Rak, Bitoros HaMishpatim, Bitoros Uvimishpatim Uvichukim. When it comes to the legal sections of Chumash, in Matzanu Shnei Tam and Lepsukim, if we find two interpretations of a pasuk, Batama Echa Kedivri Hamatikim, Shayukulam Tzadikim, Nishan Alamitam Blisafik Biadayim Chazakim. And if there's going to be a little bit of a debate between the way that Chazal interpret the pasuk in the halachic sections, that is what we are going to do. We're going to avoid Chalila v'Chalila Milas Arim Imat Tzadukim. We don't want to go near the Tzedukim, just interpreting Torah B'Chsav without Torah B'Alpam, those sections. It's not what we want to do. Rak kadmoneinu haya emes, v'chol devreim emes, v'ashem elokim emes, yadches avdo b'derech emes. And there's a truth in the way that Chazal interprets Pesukim. It says the Ibn Ezra, when I get up to Parshat Mishpatim, I am going to begin to translate it in many ways more bound by how Chazal translated it, The Rashbam, however, in Parshas Mishpatim, has a small hakdam as hakdam in the Parshas Mishpatim. Says the Rashbam in his hakdam in the Parshas Mishpatim, Yadu v'avinu yodei seichel, ki lovati lefaris halachos afal pi shem ikar. It is true, says the Rashbam, that most critical is knowing the halacha. It is true that most important is knowing the way Chazal tell us how to interpret these psukim in the halachic sections. But, Miktsasan Yimtu even Beferushi Rabbi Shlomo, you'll find a lot of these drasha, a lot of these gemaras, a lot of these halachic interpretations in the papers of Rashi. V'ani lefareish pshuton shel mikra usbati. But that's not what I'm here to do. V'efareish hadinim v'alachos v'derech eretz My commentary on Chumash is a commentary al derech hapshat. I'm comfortable interpreting halachic sections of Chumash al derech hapshat, even though I'm not saying that the halacha is not ikar. I'm not saying the halacha is not more significant or more powerful. I'm just saying that that's not how I'm going to interpret it. I'm interpreting al derech hapshat. So what you have is, number one way of learning Chumash, and even though they learn this way, as is clear in the Rashbam, the Ibn Ezra, don't deny the validity of other ways of learning Chumash. They're not these like Shutoshal Mikra people that like can't handle it. Anyone doesn't say anything according to Shutoshal Mikra. That's not what it is. It's okay to be other things. They're not denying that. They are one particular Mahalach. And their Mahalach is a Mahalach of Pshat. What you see is a question of, will it be different in different sections of Chumash and the way that you're going to function? This, if we had more time to speak about some like a controversial Rashbam or two, or a Rashbam that may have been left out in some of the reprintings of the Rashbam. There's a lot of really interesting things that emerge as a result. On this sheet in source number 4, there's some really, really interesting Torah here. One Derech Agav implication or nafkamina from this is a discussion that relates to a comment of the Maharshal Yom Tov Shlomo, Rabbi Yitzchak Yosef, the current Sfarad Chief Rabbi, in his 3-volume set of Svarim called Ein Yitzchak, about Klalim of Psak, raises an interesting question that many Achronim raise, and we'll ask it here in the following way. If the Rashbam or the Ibn Ezra say something on Chumash, can it have halachic ramifications? You know, sometimes you're looking for a certain dinim, as an example, when the questions come up about civilian casualties in wartime and halachic perspectives, so many, Shefter, Rasher Weiss, Rudolf Lior, point out that one of the best mekoros we have as far as relating to civilian casualties in wartime is in Maharal in Gur Aryeh in the context of Shechem. Okay, so when is there a halachic source? When is there a halachic source? When is there a Perush in Chumash? Is it a halachic source also? It's something that's relevant. Halach lamaisa, so can I or can I not rely on it at all? So l'chora, it's pretty clear that in the world of the Rashbam, you'd be very hesitant ever relying halach lamaisa on his Perush in Chumash because he's very explicit. He's not trying to speak in terms of halach lemaisa. He's trying to speak in terms of pshuto shel mikra. That is the opening and one way that people look at chumash. We're trying to give overviews. This is it's enough that hopefully on some level, if you learn these perushim ever, when you're opening them up, you can begin to be sensitive a little bit more, maybe what they're doing. We're skipping a whole lot of centuries and we're talking about Rav Hirsch now. Rav Hirsch would have very different perush and chumash. A lot to say about Rav Hirsch, a lot to say about what he did. We're going to try to speak about some of what he did in a way which I think is important. To speak about Rav Hirsch, Perush Chumash, in a real way would require a couple of shiurim, but we're trying to familiarize ourselves a little bit. Number one, Rav Hirsch is writing in a bit of a different time. He's writing in a bit of a different style. Rav Hirsch writes a sefer in German. He writes a sefer in German. He writes it because he wants it to be accessible to people around him when he lived. That's always a question, the language that you write in, be it the actual language or the level of language. You're writing out a sefer nowadays, you write it in modern Hebrew, you write it in rabbinic Hebrew. It all impacts your audience. Well, that's who you're writing for. He wrote it in German, the way that the Rambam and many, you know, Rambam wrote most of his farm in Arabic, that you write for the people around. Rav Hirsch, I think, does a bunch of different things in his Perush and Chumash that are very important. We'll talk about at least 3 of them, and we'll sort of go from there. Number one. In a world famous piece in Parshas Mishpatim, it's source number 1 in the Rav Hirsch section here, where Rav Hirsch is a comment about the relationship between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh, a world famous piece. What is the relationship? All right, Torah Shebichtav, there's often, it feels like sometimes there's information missing. There's information missing from the story. You know, what was really motivating certain people? What else really happened? Sometimes it's pretty critical information that seems to be missing from Chumash. How Avram found the Ribono Shel Olam sounds like or it seemed like a relatively important thing to know. But it starts with Lech Lecha, Tan Be'er Yisrael. Why? Who was he? What did he do to make himself worthy of it? I don't know. Some things are missing a little bit. So first as follows. The written Torah, I'm reading in English for the following reason. He wrote it in German. I don't speak German, so I can't read it in German. I don't believe anyone here speaks German to my knowledge, so we can't do it in German. However, so we could do it from the Hebrew translation of German or from the English translation. Once we're going with Targum, and once we're going with the translation, English seemed like a fine option to go with. I also own the English version and not the Hebrew version, so that makes it a little bit simpler as well. The written Torah is to be the oral Torah in the relationship of short notes on a full and extensive lecture on any scientific subject. For the students who have heard the lecture before, short notes are quite sufficient to bring back a freshness of mind at any time the whole subject of the lecture. Says Rav Hirsch as follows. I would have time as I'm note-taking here, but we'll save that for a different time. But Rav Hirsch claims like this. The Torah was given over to Torah Shebal Peh. Talking about Torah Shebal Peh, what's the relation between Torah Shebasav and Torah Shebal Peh? Torah Shebasav in many ways are like notes. Like notes that were written down. Notes not like the stenographer, not writing down every single word verbatim, but notes, summaries of what happened. If you're really connected, Rav Hirsch understands, so sometimes in the notes, there are small things in the notes that are able to trigger and bring up broader ideas and broader references. You figure out, think about your notes, not even your first time in this year, but think about your notes if you've gone over something a bunch of times and you're writing like shorthand before a test. And you have that shorthand before a test and like seeing even like a sentence here conjures up for you, you know, longer or larger ideas, you know, story about X. And suddenly that brings up the whole Maisa, but you didn't write down the whole Maisa. Think about when a person's speaking things publicly, not writing out every word, but they jot down some Rosh Hashanah to go through. Says Rav Hirsch, that's really what Torah Shebichsav is. That's really what Torah Shebichsav is. Torah Shebichsav are the short notes. If you're really holding, so then a word, a mark, exclamation, a dot, all those things can become incredibly important. If you haven't heard the original lecture and you're just going to read the notes, so then how well are you really going to understand? I remember when I was talking with someone, I said, "Who's Shir you?" And he said, "This person Shir." I said, "Oh, interesting." I said, I thought, I don't know. I always thought person X's Shir always seemed amazing to me. I'm sure other people were also great. I always loved it. Your yeshiva, person X, I thought was fantastic. He said, Yeah. I always read the notes. I always read the notes from that person's shiur. It really is great. So I remember thinking, like, but reading the notes isn't the same thing. Reading notes is not the same thing. You know, Rabbi Nachman Kuti Maran speaks about that at length. That a hearing Torah live, you know, is a very different kind of experience. There's something there. So says Rav Hirsch, the following. You know, imagine you had someone that just had the lecture notes, the shorthand that you have before your test. And then he wasn't at the lecture. You say, guess, fill in the rest on your own. So of course you're going to be missing a whole lot. Of course you're going to say things that are absolutely ridiculous because you don't have the whole lecture. So says Rav Hirsch, in many ways, a dominant part of what he's doing, the Malbim, the Ksavik Kabbalah, there were others during his time that were doing similar things. Again, but we're giving Rosh Hashanah right now. Says Rav Hirsch, if you can't understand Torah Shebichsav without knowing Torah Shebaal Peh, if you have Torah Shebaal Peh, the whole lecture. So then if you know Torah Shebaal Peh and you open up a Chumash, you'll discover within Chumash beautiful things. You'll discover in the Chumash how this word really was teaching me this halacha or this idea. So for Hirsch, in many ways, one of the primary things that he does is show for us the link between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebaal Peh. Whereas, and again, not saying that they're all mutually exclusive, but for the Rashbam and the Ibn Ezra, they at times highlight the gap between Kedushal Mikra and the way Chazal Darshan. For Rav Hirsch, it's Adarabba. What you end up being able to see sometimes is, as Rav Hirsch writes in source number 2, Embracious and Parak Test, that the Torah Shebaal Peh preceded the Torah Shebichsav. That's not that we had Torah Shebichsav and then on that we added certain ideas. No! The whole story was given first. We then Torah Shebichsav is like the shorthand version of it. Now, it's a masterful shorthand version. It's a perfect shorthand version. What could be hinted to it at an extra letter is unfathomable. But Torah Shebaal Peh, we have the whole lecture. And if you look at that with that, you're going to lose out. So what's one of the things for Rav Hirsch that you do when you learn Chumash? What's one of Rav Hirsch's goals? One of Rav Hirsch's goals is to bridge that gap, to show us how the lecture notes of Chumash can be and can be part of and connected to the larger story of what really happened. Now, theoretically, that can happen in halachic sections. That can happen in the narrative, in story. It's either one. That's one of the ways that you do it. Now, for Rav Hirsch, there's two or three additional things here which are intriguing. It's not the only thing that Rav Hirsch does. Rav Hirsch does other things also. Many of us may know that Rav Hirsch is like a little bit controversial piece. It's also spoken about at length in the past. It's fairly comfortable at times critiquing the Avos. That's not always explicitly based on Chazal. It's not like the only thing he does is relate to Torah Shebaal Peh. He has some arguments about the parenting of the Avos. you treat Yaakov and Esav as the same. So then it's not Chanchanar Apidarko. One will become Yaakov, one will become Esav. You start favoring certain siblings. So what do you think is going to happen? There's going to be disagreement. River first has is, he's not always doing this, but one of the primary things he does is that. Two additional pieces here, which I think are interesting. One of the real contributions of Rav Hirsch, especially if you learn, it's like a, it took me a long time, actually, when I was my first year married on Hanukkah. So I was, why you always, I was always off, at least for one day in Hanukkah. So I went with my wife to Borough Park, I think, to Brooklyn, to go, I forget why, maybe it was like we needed to buy something, we just got, I don't know, we did it for a while, it was a lot of, it was enjoyable. So, funny, interesting things, like my first year being married, so you think like you have to do everything together the whole time, or else that's like a pigam in the koach of your marriage. So that meant that if she was gonna go shopping for clothing, so I had to like come and like sit awkwardly, like, you know, in that store, just like sitting there and waiting. If I was gonna go somewhere I wanted to go, she had to like sit there also like awkwardly waiting. At some point, you finally get to the point where you realize like, no, it's okay, like I'll see you in 20 minutes. Like, okay, we'll go for lunch together, have a very nice time, but like it's okay if I go to that store. She goes to that store, it's more efficient and it's normal and no one gets bored for extended periods of time. So we were walking out once going somewhere, it was one of these moments, I think it was that first year. And I was like, and she wanted to go to a certain store somewhere. I had no interest in going there. I don't remember what store it was, but there are unfortunate, there are many I have no interest in going to. And as we went there, so outside they were selling like used svarim. They were selling used svarim. So I was like, hey, the Ribbono Shel Olam believes in me, you know? This is good. So my wife went out and it was like a lot of like used svarim for very cheap. So then my wife, like, so then it was like, she's like, oh, timing wise, it was like, as long as you want, you know, this is great. Do whatever you want, you know, we're good. As if I was in control, it's how long it would be anyway, it's comical. So then I said, so I was there looking through and I found a set of Rav Hirsch and Chumash that had been used. They were selling it. It was individual volume, but the whole set was there. I don't know, it was like $5 a volume. The whole set was like $35, I think, for the whole set of Rav Hirsch. Unbelievable, like underlined throughout everything, highlighted everything. Whoever had it, really, that was it. When we first got it, I got it because I was like, Rav Hirsch and Chumash, like, that's like an important safer, I think. No, I want to hear someone say that. It's cheap. I don't know. It's worthwhile. I may have enough time here to go through all of it before we can go back home. So I figured, you know, I'll get all seven volumes. So I got it. And for a while, I couldn't really get into it. And it's like opened up a little bit and like here and there. And like you really couldn't. Then it's similarly also. There are times I just couldn't. It didn't like do it. Like, it's not like a question and an answer. It wasn't like I didn't really get. As I get older, I started learning it a little bit more, so I had a little bit more appreciation. One thing Derek Hirsch does, he's very into the etymology of words. He's a believer that if you can define words precisely, that will give you tremendous insight into Chumash. You can define words nicely, so if you really, what the Shorash really is, what the kind of, so then you can start to appreciate more. It's one of the ways you can appreciate more what Chazal did in Torah Shebaal Peh. If you don't really know what the words mean, it's a little bit against a little bit of that, so the notes aren't as good. If part of the Galus that knows that they hint at certain things, so the more that you have precise definitions, the more valuable it is. But one of the which I think is unbelievable, and I think sometimes in many ways, it's the godless of Rav Hirsch and Chumash, and I think in many ways, it's one of the most underappreciated things is out there. In my experience, people that write Sfarim, if you would have asked me, your goal is to show how all the different sections of Chumash, this word and that word, especially based on some ideas of grammar and etymology and the like, are linking Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. So I would have said that's undoubtedly a very important contribution. You got to know how to do that. It's an important contribution. It is. I would have suspected, though, that Sefer is indescribably not inspiring. Like, it won't be relevant on a, like, on a moral level. It's not going to move me to doing it differently. It's technical. It's technical. Grammar and inspiration, in my experience in life, and, you know, God help me, maybe I'm wrong, but in my experience, those two things don't go together as often. I don't remember being in an English class and learning English grammar and people walking out and saying, oh my God, that was amazing. I'm a new person right now. I think it's all different. I would say that I don't remember in being in diktuk classes and being in taking Hebrew, be it in elementary school, high school, or college, and walking out and said, that PL, whoa. That was amazing. That was my mission. That was doesn't get better than that. What's amazing about Rav Hirsch's Sefer on Chumash is filled with beautiful, beautiful insights. Beautiful. And he does it. It begins at times maybe a little bit technically. It begins a little bit with a defining a word. But part of Rav Hirsch isn't just a Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebaal Peh are connected. It's that it's not just dry halacha. There are insights that are there that are so powerful and so beautiful and so real. What's amazing about it is that Rav Hirsch does it in all areas of Chumash. So when it comes to Sefer Vayikra in the beginning about the Karbanos, and the Karbanos for many of us, we struggle with a little bit, the Karbanos. The Karbanos, they're not so easy. If you're the kind of guy that likes Divrei Torah, so it suddenly parses Vayikra time. Let's even say you survived Truma Tzava. You made your way through, back up Kude, whatever. You got what you got. Truma, Vasuyim, Mikas, Chanti, Besocham. You said some word about that, and then you got something. And now it's Vayikra time. So what you find some people do, if they're into like the Vort or the message or the Shmooze that's based in that Parsha, so basically they're looking for anything that is the loosest connection possible to anything which resembles anything in Sefer parts of Vayikra, and they have their Shmooze. Part of the godless of Rav Hirsch is that Rav Hirsch, through his discussion of Karban Ola, will tell you a profound and beautiful idea about what it means to constantly be striving to grow. But not because it's like he's pointing out like something about Ola. He's pointing out as an example, is it not intriguing, says Rav Hirsch, that most Karbanos are named after their essence. So a Shlamim makes Shalom, because everyone can eat the Shlamim, the Mizbeach, the Kohen, and the Vamim. It's a Karban of Shalom. A Chatas is a Karban which is brought as a sin offering, because there was a chait that took place. But says Rav Hirsch, is it not interesting that Ola is that it all gets consumed. The carbon Ola is the only carbon which gets entirely burned. Says Rav Hirsch, why are we describing Ola based on the way it's offered, not based on its essence? And he has a beautiful insight about what an Ola is. Ola is about being Ola. It's about going up. It's about progress and moving. And he speaks in light of that about different halachas. That's why the first and last carbon every day in the Mikdash, Chazal Darshan, is the carbon Ola. Because that's what you want to have if you're as a Kevasa Echad, as a Kevasa Sheni. Those are carbon Olas. Those are carbonos about striving and growing and building. And if Hirsch is going to point out halachas based on that, halachas based on that. That's why the relation with Chazal, it's all there in Rav Hirsch. So for Rav Hirsch, part of the godless of Rav Hirsch. We spoke about Yom Kippur night even, some Torahs of Rav Hirsch, but the Kohen Gadol's Avodah and Yom Kippur. A lot of the gods of Rav Hirsch is it's bridging Torah B'Chsav and Torah Baal Peh times. It's really giving us insight into those lecture notes. It's at times being free to be a little bit original, maybe to critique a little bit, but it's really at its core, it's a way of reading Chumash, which is geared towards also moving you to want to be better, moving you to give you insights to improve in a meaningful way. That's a different goal of writing a Peirush in Chumash. Some only have the goal of doing that, so it's Musar Shmuzin on Chumash. It's Sichos on Chumash. Some have the goal of explaining the text. That's the Rashbam, that's the Ibn Ezra, that's their goal. Others have the goal of something else. Their goal for Rav Hirsch is the text, and appreciating the text in the context of the Torah Baal Peh, which came first, the Torah Baal Peh, which is going to give us insight how to read Chumash well. But you can do that in a way which can move you. And even the legal sections for Rav Hirsch, even the sections of narrow and what can be, to use the word even, dry halacha, they're not dry at all. They're very powerful. They're very beautiful. It's a lot of amazing, amazing Torah which can be there. Let's shift to a third way to learn Chumash. And that's really Rabbi Lamb. Rabbi Lamb is not the first or the only to do what we're going to describe. He just did it in an excellent way. He did it in an excellent way, in a very beautiful way. And I want to speak about another way. It's not that Rabbi Lamb didn't learn Rashbam or Ibn Ezra. We're comparing them. Rashbam and Ibn Ezra are the great Rishonim that make in Mishnah Gedolos. It's that there's room for people to have their unique kind of a style. I want to speak about one element of what Rabbi Lamb did. He did other things also. What I think is a strong element of his legacy and how he learned Chumash. It really comes up that they have now more, but at least five volumes on Chumash of Rabbi Lamb's drushas. Let me begin by noting the following. Rabbi Lamb wrote an article years ago. It's a beautiful article. It's a very fascinating article called Notes of an Unrepentant Darshan. Rabbi Lamb says it like this. You know, there's a phenomenon out there that people want to hear halacha. People want to know what we do. People want to know maybe even at times, you know, we would say nowadays, like a Shushal Mikra. But there's something called Drush. There's something called Drush. It's in Pardes, the Darshan things. We'll speak more about Drush probably next week a little bit. But Drush is not the Pshat, nor is it how we Paskin, nor is it how we Paskin. It's a very beautiful insight, a homiletical interpretation, which you're using an insight to derive something about Chumash, a very, very beautiful idea, a very, very beautiful idea. But it's not really the Pshat or anything else. Rabbis that give drushas in shuls, Shabbat Lam is referring to a particular phenomenon. You can go into a shul sometimes where it's done by a big Talmid Chacham, and the goal of that drush is really just saying over a halachic idea or something. You know, like, the idea of drush is ridiculous. Now, you're a place sometimes, you say a board at Shabbos table, and it's drush or something, and the person will say, like, that's not pshat, or like, it's not really how we paskin. And for Balaam, note of an unrepentant. He's not going to do tshuva for being a darshan. He's a person that believes that drush is an art form, that drush is critically important, and that drush is the kind of thing which can, in many ways, move people in a way which is very, very powerful. So Balaam gave drushas. He gave sermons in shul. And what he did was he extracted ideas, not through the realm of pshat, but ideas that could be incredibly, incredibly meaningful, incredibly inspiring, incredibly relevant to show how Torah can be relevant to a particular time. His goal wasn't writing a translation of Chumash, nor telling you how to paskin. It was about using Chumash. I don't mean using in the bad way. Using Chumash as the basis for describing and highlighting ideas that are going to be moving, inspiring, insightful, and substantive. By Lamb writes, we sometimes relate to Drush as those that couldn't say a pshat or couldn't learn really. The same idea of Drush is that Drush is an art form. It's an art form. If pshat and halacha is science, so Drush is art. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. An example we spoke about, I believe, before Sukkot, Rabbi Lamb, we spoke about with the Esrog. The Esrog has a bottom and a top, the Chotem and the Pittim. The Chotem relates, if you're missing any one of them, it's Pasul. Any one of them is Pasul. The bottom part of the Esrog, the stem is missing. The Oketz is missing. It's Pasul. It's Pasul. The Pittim on top is missing. It's considered to be Pasul. Rabbi Lamb spoke about how, you know, that shows how the stem is where you come from. Pittim is where you're growing. The importance of being able to understand the importance of your past and future. You're missing the past, Pasul. Missing the future, it's Pasul. Rabbi Lamb pointed out that the psul of each is different. You're missing the stem, that's a psul of chaser. That's a psul of chaser. You're missing something fundamental. Because if you have no connection to your past, you've lost out on something fundamental. You're missing an ikker, so now you're chaser. If your pittim is missing, that's a psul of hither. That's a psul of it's not as beautiful if there's nothing new. If you're not striving, there's nothing new. And Rabbi Lamb, that's drush. That's drush. That's a pshat. No, he's using ideas to express. He's using a concept to express very, very beautiful ideas. And for Balaam in Drushas, so that's something which is an art form, which is important. We'll speak next week a little bit more about the world of Drush, but the starting point is being comfortable with the idea. There's something called Pshat, there's something called Halacha, also something called Drush. There can be nice insights that are derived, that maybe are not the simple Pshat, they're not a Gematria either. They're ideas which are going to be raised, which in many ways can resonate, which in many ways can be important, and which also require it as part of Dvar Hashem to understand things well. So halacha may always be ikar, but agadat is also really important because it teaches us and it builds us in a certain way. So we began learning a little bit about the way that people learn chumash, sensitizing ourselves to the way that people do. Next week, Be'ez Hashem, the Or Chaim and the Chasam Sofer, to be able to understand them, or in 2 weeks, whatever it is. Have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbos.